Join us this week as we descend into the darker side of human nature and uncover the shadows that dwell in the unknown. From chilling true crime and gruesome murders to spine-tingling paranormal encounters that defy explanation, we're peeling back the curtain on things that go bump in the night. So grab a flashlight and maybe a blanket, because you're listening to The Guilty and the Ghostly.
Welcome back, Guilty and Ghostly Junkies. Glad to be back.
Back again. You're just jumping in. I wasn't prepared. Okay, now I'm prepared. Maybe.
Okay, you want me to say it again?
No, it's okay. I won't make you do it again. What have y'all been up to? What have you been up to?
Oh, same old, same old. We've been getting ready for Hadley's 1 year birthday party.
That's this weekend, right?
Yes, it is this weekend.
On Sunday?
Yes, ma'am.
What time?
3.
Okay.
4? You show up a little early so you can help me decorate.
I'm going to have to show up early, and then May has practice, so we may have to leave a little early. We'll see how that works.
Okay, we'll figure something out.
Yeah.
Other than that, though, I mean, just staying busy at work. We started back in overtime, so I've been really tired. Ain't been a whole lot going on at the house.
Yeah.
Kind of lacking there. Definitely stuff that need to be cleaned and organized, but...
I get it. Josh has been gone for over a week now, which... I'm going to try to say this loud enough so this picks it up. They don't hear me. He wasn't supposed to come back till next Wednesday. I'm picking him up tonight at the airport at 10:45, and they don't know.
Sweet.
So he'll be home tonight, and he'll be able to get him up and be like,
let's go to school,
bitch. Really? Yeah. I said, if I'm picking you up that late, then you can at least take him to school so I can sleep in. So yeah, he'll be home tonight, so at least I'll have help again.
Mm-hmm. I bet that's been super stressful.
It's a lot.
Then, my kids.
And then that first week that he was gone, we had a bunch of stuff going on at work. So we were like, they're taking us out to eat for dinner. And I was like, y'all, I've got one night. I can do one night with y'all. So I did that one night. We went to Texas Day Brazil. And, ooh, that was good.
They took y'all out to Texas Day Brazil?
Yeah.
I haven't eaten there, but I've heard.
Oh, that's my... third time there, I think.
Is that the place where they'll serve like the meat off like the side?
Like on a sword, basically. Yeah.
That's
there's
super sweet.
Skirt steak, hands down. That is the only thing that I have tasted that even comes close to like Josh's cooking is their skirt steak. Still not as good as Josh's, but probably the closest that I've ever had.
I think I remember somebody telling me, don't they have like exotic meats too? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they had lamb, and which I didn't.
Yeah, that's not something we eat every day around here.
I ain't doing that. But they have like filet mignons and all kinds of stuff. And they literally, it's like on a sword. They're like, do you want this? And it's like,
drop it.
Let's go. So that was good. Other than that, I've been chasing kids, reading. I finished a book recommendation, Karen Slaughter. It was called False Witness. It was really good. It was a thriller. So I think that's the second book I've read by her. They're really good.
When do you find time to read?
I cheat and I listen to it.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So while I'm at work, while I'm driving, while I'm cleaning.
I'm just thinking, man, I don't think I could work a book into my schedule.
I do like reading physical books. I've got a Kindle, but ever since we started the podcast, I just don't have time. All my free time, I'm researching. But I did find a book on the Libby app that I'm going to use for the podcast. And it's a biography. So I'm excited about that
one. Is it a spooky book?
No. True crime.
Oh, okay.
And she survived. And she kind of retells her story, what she went through and the aftermath and everything. So
gotcha.
It was pretty cool. So other than that, that's about it. What do you think about the Paris episode and the CPR? Have you listened to the CPR one yet?
The CPR one. Is that the one where she's in the tent?
In the tent?
Maybe. I don't know. Hold up. No, that might have switched to a different podcast.
You don't even know your own sister's voices.
Well, if it wasn't yours, it definitely sounded a lot like you. And what's really weird, too, is I could have swore I heard Josh's voice. So that's very odd.
See, the last one Josh did was Bigfoot.
That's what was the one before Bigfoot?
I don't remember. It was yours, whatever we did.
I don't think it was. Was it? I don't know. There was something about a girl that went on a hiking trip and some dude was creeping around. Was this not yours? Did you seriously not
do this? No, of course.
That's so funny. Oh my goodness.
Shout out to whatever podcast that is.
Yeah, that was super creepy. And me and my helper were talking about that like all afternoon. That's so funny.
Wait, that was the Sasquatch episode.
Was it really?
Yeah, she wasn't in a tent. She was in the camping coffin is what she called it.
Camping coffin. Yeah, that was it. I was going to say.
I was so confused. I was like, there was no tent.
There, you guys about? Have some like voice, what do they call those doppelgangers out there?
That's funny. That's funny. We have mimics.
Okay, yeah, I love the. Apparently, I love the Bigfoot episode.
No lie. You swear this house is haunted. I don't think it's haunted at all. I don't get those vibes at all. But. With that being said,
here it is. Now she thinks it's haunted. Josh has been gone a week.
It's haunted. Well, yeah, it's happened before he left, and I don't think anything's happened since he's been gone. But like, I'll hear what I think is the kids being like, "Hey, mom," or saying something, and I'll try and be like, "What?" And they're not there. And they've done the same thing where they think it's me calling for them, and then they'll go in there, and nobody's in there.
I'm not going to sit here and say I've heard anything in this house, and I haven't sat in this house long enough to, like, experience anything myself, but there's just something weird about this house.
It's our doom room.
It's not even this room. Like, honestly, like, right now it feels fine.
Yeah.
But, like, there's other
things. I think it's, like, maybe the dark colors, and it's so dark in this house.
That's bizarre because we're sitting in the darkest room possible right now. Don't tell me it's the colors of the house. I don't know. Sometimes when I walk through this house, I just get a weird feeling.
Yeah.
And it's not some... Actually, I say that. You know what? It's happened a couple different places. Like, honestly, out there on the lake, that house, you had a weird feeling to it, too.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, the one out there that y'all bought from Nona and Farrell or was renting from them, that one was... It was a weird
that one was too. Probably the worst one that I have ever felt.
Mm-hmm. See, it's I think it's bizarre though because I feel like I guess maybe as like I don't know maybe as the history gets richer maybe it gets a little more easy to feel for everybody. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Well, speaking of creepy feels, you ready for our story?
Yes.
So we are doing Waverly Hills.
Waverly Place, huh?
No. No. Although that would be cool. Be like, okay, I'm going to tell you a story about a wizard. No, so Waverly Hills, we are going to be in Louisville, Kentucky. On a hill overlooking Louisville, Kentucky, stands a massive 5-story building. Locals call it one of the most haunted places in America. Ghost hunters report shadowy figures in the halls, unexplained screams, and more. And this has become known as Waverly Hills Sanatorium.
Sanatorium? What is a sanatorium? Yes. Like an insane asylum?
No. I'm just going to tell you all about it.
Sweet.
Don't you love it?
Mm-hmm.
So, before it became known as one of the most haunted places in America, it was a place of medicine, science, and suffering.
Suffering?
Suffering. Just wait. Thousands came here seeking hope against one of the deadliest diseases in human history. Take a guess.
Tuberculosis.
Bam. Yes. How do you know? You're so smart.
I just envision a bunch of people in iron lungs right now.
In what?
And you know.
Oh, iron lungs. Yeah, I thought you said in Ireland. I was like, what? Okay. Well, to understand Waverly, we need to understand tuberculosis, also known as TB, consumption, or the white plague.
I haven't heard it called that before.
Yeah, all those things. TB has existed for thousands of years. It was even discovered that Egyptian mummies were affected by it. By the 1800s, it was the leading cause of death in Europe and America. People affected by the disease would become pale, start coughing up blood, and they just basically would start wasting away. Very sad. Have you seen pictures from it?
I mean, other than people in iron lungs, no.
We're not talking about iron lungs today.
I mean, isn't that what they, like, I don't want to say it is the cure for it, but, like, isn't that how they were helping people, like, I guess, live through it?
Not here.
No?
Iron lungs probably would have been very welcomed.
Yeah?
Yeah. In 1882, Dr. Robert Koch, I believe is how he's say it, identified the TB bacterium, proving that it was contagious. Cities would become hotspots for the disease, and by the early 1900s, 1 in 7 Americans would die from TB.
I didn't know it was contagious. I thought it was hereditary.
No.
Man.
Louisville was especially vulnerable due to the damp Ohio River Valley. There was little anyone could do once someone started showing symptoms. They would just watch helplessly as their loved one would basically just cough themselves to death.
Oh, that's terrible.
There was no treatment at the time. So sanatoriums basically became the solution. Patients were sent to be isolated hospitals on hills due to having fresh air, and the patients could be in isolation in hopes to reduce passing the disease to anyone else.
It kind of makes sense. You're having trouble breathing.
And everybody lived in close quarters back then too, so if one got sick, I mean, automatically.
Was there like a time period for this?
That very next sentence.
Okay.
In the late 1800s.
Oh, okay. So you got to think there's not very much infrastructure.
No. So this is kind of how Waverly Hills came to be. So in the late 1800s, a man named Major Thomas Hayes owned the land where Waverly Hills now stands. It was quiet, rural, and far from the bustle of Louisville. Hayes wanted his family to have their own private retreat, and like many parents at that time, he built a small one-room schoolhouse on the property for his daughters and the local children. So they're just like,
Keep him from getting that TB.
I don't want you in my house. I'm gonna build a separate building. Go get your schooling. I think this, but no, I think TB was going on, but it wasn't the sanatorium yet. The teacher he hired was a book lover, especially fond of Sir Walter Scott's famous Waverley novels. So she named the little schoolhouse the Waverley School. Major Hayes liked the sound of it. The name had a dignified, old-world feel, so he gave the entire property the name Waverly Hill. In 1908, the Jefferson County Board of Tuberculosis Hospital purchased the Waverly Hills property from the Hayes family. In 1910, Jefferson County built a small wooden sanatorium on Waverly Hill that only held about 40 patients at the time. The treatment included fresh air, sunlight, and rest. Like, that's basically all that they could do when they would come down with it is fresh air, sleep, get some sun.
That's rough.
Patients would be wheeled out to open air porches year round, including during freezing winters. Nurses would bundle patients in blankets and then place a snow sheet over them and just kind of set them out and was like, good luck, get your fresh air, buddy.
Yeah, I feel like that'd probably
And
be
you're
harder to
already
breathe.
sick and you can't breathe and you're in that freezing cold. 'Cause think about when you're already sick and you go outside and you take in that fresh air or that cold air,
It
it
hurts.
hurts.
I bet they start coughing up more blood.
Yeah. Well, in 1914, they added a children's pavilion. Imagine a child coughing blood, separated from their family, and left in a strange, cold building.
That's terrible.
That's very, very terrible.
Guess there's really not much that could have been done then.
No, and if it's super contagious,
You can't just let him keep.
sorry, little. I don't want to say the name. The name that keeps coming up is he. We'll talk about him in a minute.
No, no.
It's sad. Many would never return home, and the demand for beds grew quickly. Eventually, this forced Louisville to plan for a larger and more modern facility. So in 1926, Waverly Hills expanded into a massive five-story structure that was shaped like a bat. It would then accommodate over 400 patients. So they went from 40
You said 19 what?
400,
46?
1926.
26? I was fixing to say. You put this in perspective. This wasn't, I don't want to say it wasn't that long ago, but
Yeah.
grandma's,
Yeah.
grandma's age.
It's still not that long ago. And then you think about COVID and everything and think about what we went through. You know, if somebody ended up with it, you isolate them, you put them in a room by yourself and say, good luck.
Yeah, you
But
weren't
at least
like
we have,
coughing up blood and
yeah.
stuff, though.
Just,
Thank goodness.
well, with,
Losing their sights and smell, or smell and taste.
yeah. Somebody lost their sight? That's terrible. I think it's kind of cool they did it as a bat. I wonder if they did that on purpose.
Who knows?
That's pretty cool. With the new layout, it was self-sufficient, consisting of its own post office, zip code, water treatment, and food production. So, like, they grew their own meat and
Completely
vegetables
self-contained.
completely. Staff and patients rarely had to leave the facility. The first floor was labs, kitchens, and treatment rooms. The second through fourth floor were basically like the patient wards, so where they kept the patients at. And then the fifth floor was the children's ward and the chapel. Why would you put the children? Well, I guess they're sick, so they're not gonna be running around and making noise. I was gonna say, why would you put the children on the top floor? Because that's all you would hear was doo-doo-doo-doo.
That's funny. That's what you're thinking about. I'm sitting here thinking about what the workers were like going through, like if there were any like hazard pay, if there was like what precautions were taken to keep you from contracting TB,
They didn't have any.
or if they already had TB and they was just kind of like barking there because they're gonna die anyhow. Might as well hopefully find a cure before that happens.
So how are you the one that's like, I volunteer, I know that my chances aren't great. I'm kind of at the end of my rope, so I'm just gonna go to work here. That is funny that we thought about different things. Below the structure was a 500-foot tunnel that ran downhill. Originally, the tunnel was built for supplies. They didn't want a lot of people coming in and out of the facility and then be exposed to TB while delivering supplies. With the death rates being so high, this tunnel later became a body chute and an area to be able to store bodies and allow them to be transported discreetly.
I knew it. You said something about a 500-foot tunnel, and I was thinking instantly. You said transport supplies. No.
No. Well, the actual morgue only had like two or three, I guess you call them drawers, to hold bodies. And so with the death rate being so high, like they had to do
That
something.
was poorly planned.
Yeah, so that's why they started using the tunnel. They also thought this would preserve the morale of the living patients. Because if they're seeing all these bodies being stored in the morgue, they're gonna be like, it ain't looking good.
Yeah, what happens when one of those patients sees you tossing a body down the chute there?
Yeah, it, which I didn't talk about it in this, but I was listening to And That's Why We Drink, and M, they covered it, and they said that the body count was so high that they couldn't keep up with the bodies as far as disposing of them.
Oh,
And
gross.
because they really didn't know how it was being transmitted between patients, so they would disembowel them in the tunnel and basically drain all their blood and guts and everything, trying to get the infection out. So it'd run down this tunnel, and then there would be piles of bodies, and they couldn't keep up with cremating them, so they would just light the entire pile on fire.
Wow, that's chaotic.
Crazy. Some claim that the death toll was around 60,000, but records only show it to be closer to 8,000 to 10,000, which that is still a huge number.
That's as many people that went to Disneyland on the opening day.
That's crazy. And think about the pictures with that, all those people. That's wild. So before antibiotics, treatments were brutal. So I'm gonna have you pick your poison. Which type of treatment do you want to go through? I'm not gonna tell you what they are. I'm just gonna read the names. The first one is artificial pneumothorax, thoracoplasty. Let's see here. We also have phrenic nerve crush. And I think that was the last one.
It's not that one. That one
Not
does
that
not
one.
sound pleasant at all.
Oh, or UV light therapy.
Okay, that sounds halfway decent. UV light therapy sounds like what they do to babies with jaundice now.
Okay.
That's what we're gonna go with, UV
Okay.
light therapy.
So let me go ahead and tell you what the other ones are. Let's tell you which ones you passed up. So let me get back up here. Okay, so the first one was the artificial pneumothorax. Doctors would take a long needle and carefully slip it into the space around the lung. Then they would pump in air or sometimes another gas until the lung collapsed, just enough to let it rest. The thinking was that if the lung wasn't working so hard, the tuberculosis bacteria inside wouldn't spread as easily, and then the lung could heal. This wasn't just a one-time procedure. Patients often had to come back again and again, sometimes for weeks, so doctors could keep adding more air. They would check the collapsed lung with x-rays and special machines that were built for this purpose. So that was the first one.
So when I had my appendix removed, they pump air into your body. So they have like, I think it was three small incisions, and one of them's to get the appendix out, right? And for, I guess for the tools too, but one of them's for the tube of air that they use that they pump in. It gives them room to work, so they don't have to be so invasive about it. Well, everything was great except for like that first day or two out of the hospital, and it still had the trapped gas inside of like my body. And like no matter how I lay it, it'd always go up. But it felt like,
And it was just stuck in there.
yeah, it felt like when it was up here in like my collarbone when I was sitting up, it felt like my collarbone was broken. That's how bad it was. So I
Jeez.
couldn't imagine what it'd feel like to have your
It
lungs
must pump
just
up.
to the point where they're fixing a collapse or have collapsed. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't sound Yeah, that sounds like torture.
So you're glad you skipped that one.
Yeah.
Then we have the thoracoplasty. Surgeons would actually remove section of a patient's ribs so that the chest wall could cave in and squeeze down on the lung. The goal was to force the diseased part of the lung to collapse, almost like crushing a balloon until the air inside couldn't move. The doctors believed that by collapsing the lung, again, they could rest it and give the TV cavities a chance to close up and heal. Thoracoplasty wasn't quick or easy. It usually required multiple surgeries. Sometimes doctors would have removed as many as 7 or 8 ribs in stages. Patients were often left with a visibly sunken chest on one side, permanent scarring, and then lifelong breathing difficulties. Of course, recovery was long and painful, but at the time, it was considered worth the risk if it meant survival.
What was the survival rate?
I should have looked that up. I did not. So, yeah, you're just lying there.
That kind of sounds optimistic. I mean, that sounded like a horrible surgery and procedure, but it kind of felt like that was the way to go.
Yeah.
But at the same time, not the way to go.
Cutting your ribs off. Think how bad it is when you break a rib.
Yeah, well, I mean, can it hurt? It's not there.
Do you remember, so when I was younger, I always forget I'm a little bit older than you, there was a rumor that went around about Marilyn Manson. Did you ever hear that rumor?
That she slept with who? Was it Ronald Reagan?
That's Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, Marilyn Manson. My bad. My bad.
Wrong one.
What was his?
He I feel like I've had a rib removed.
So he could suck his arm.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
I have no idea. Because, like, you had computers when you were growing up. We did not. But that rumor went through every school and child group. Everybody talked about how Marilyn Manson had a rib removed so he could
suck his own wing.
Wild. Wow.
Hey, I feel like if anybody would do it, he's crazy enough to.
Yeah, for sure. Well, today, thoracoplasty is almost never performed, except in very rare cases for drug-resistant TB. But back then, it was one of the boldest and most brutal weapons in the fight against the white plague.
I'm guessing it was successful because how they're still kind of doing
that. If they still need it every now and then. Still doesn't sound great. So option number three, door number three, the phrenic nerve crush. That sounds like a big, scary...
Sounds like we're just going to start crushing my nerves.
Well, the phrenic nerve is what controls your diaphragm, that muscle just under your lungs that helps you breathe in and out. Surgeons discovered that if they deliberately damaged or crushed this nerve, the diaphragm on one side of the body would stop working. Without that motion pulling air into the lung on that side would partially collapse. Sounds shocking, but it was like the less invasive and alternative procedure. Instead of removing ribs or filling the chest with foreign objects, doctors could just simply stop the lung from expanding as much, which again, in theory, gave the diseased tissue a chance to rest and heal.
I think that's kind of wild in the idea that all of these procedures aim to just stop you from breathing.
Yeah, just quit breathing.
Yeah, and you'll heal, bro. Just quit breathing.
The procedure itself was quick compared to other surgeries. A surgeon would make a small incision in the neck or chest, find the phrenic nerve, and crush it between forceps. For some patients, this was permanent. The nerve would never recover. For others, it did sometimes grow back, and then the lung began expanding again, which meant the operation would have to be repeated.
Guess it depends on how pissed off the doctor was that day, how hard he squeezed in forceps.
Yeah. Patients often described the aftermath as deeply uncomfortable, breathing felt uneven, and many developed long-term shortness of breath, which...
No surprise.
Which I didn't put it in here. I should have. It also, to stop people from, like, moving and being able to inhale all the way, they would stack sandbags on their chest, heavy sandbags, basically to put enough pressure on them so that they couldn't breathe in and out.
So their lungs would partially collapse.
Yeah, basically. So then we have door number four. This is what you chose, the UV light therapy. Before antibiotics, doctors believed sunlight had powerful healing effects on TB. The logic was simple. TB bacteria didn't thrive in direct sunlight, and patients often seemed to improve when they spent time outdoors. But not every patient could be wheeled outside to lie in the sun, especially in the winter or if they were too sick to move, and that's when UV therapy came in. Special lamps were set up to mimic the sun's rays, bathing patients in ultraviolet light. I said violent. It's ultraviolet. Ultraviolet light. Sometimes this was done on the skin to improve overall health and stimulate vitamin D production, which doctors thought boosted the immune system. In other cases, patients actually had light shown into their throats, lungs, or even directly deep into their TB wounds in hopes of killing off the germs.
Wow.
Wild.
Okay. All right. Well, I figured we was just going to be sitting in front of some lamps, but they're putting it inside of people.
And let me keep reading. Yeah, here it goes. At Waverly Hills, you can imagine rows of patients lined up, faces and chest exposed to the glow of these lamps. Nurses carefully measured how much time each person spent under the lights because too much exposure caused burns, eye damage, or even severe discomfort. For some, it may have offered a sense of relief or at least hope it was helping. For others, it was just another exhausting routine in a long losing fight against the disease.
UV light's the same light they use for tanning beds.
Mm-hmm.
So they're basically all just getting like
just getting cooked.
Indoor tan.
Yeah. Like I mentioned earlier, fresh air was the biggest treatment, but it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows. Patients would be bundled up and left outdoors, even in snowstorms. Nurses told of frost forming on eyelashes of patients.
There's got to be a line that you got to draw.
Yeah. Thank. Which I may mention it on down here. They basically said they would bundle up. Oh, I think I said it earlier. They bundle them up in blankets, like for warmth. And then they put snow sheets over them to keep the snow off of them. And would just like leave them outside. Get your fresh air. Let me shake the snow off you, sir. It's time to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, your eyelids are frozen? I'm so sorry.
They'll thaw out, sweetie.
You'll be all right. These treatments sound brutal today, and they were, but back then, they were often the only hope doctors could offer before antibiotics changed everything.
Well, if there weren't any other options, I mean, it was either try these methods or sit in your bed and cough and die.
Yeah, if that's
might as well try it.
Yeah, if I'm gonna die, I might as well have a little
dignity.
Yeah. Well, there was a young nurse who would contract TB and would become a patient herself. She would then later die from the disease in Waverly Hills. Families lost multiple children to TB, and there was one Louisville family that lost 3 children over 6 years. 3 of their children in 6 years to TB. Mm-hmm. Watching your roommate die and seeing new patients instantly take their beds and being stuck in isolation would have a profound effect on patient psychology. Depression and suicide were very common. In room 502, it would later become famous for a nurse's alleged suicide. The exact events were unknown, but the despair was real, and that would shape Waverly's dark legacy. Finally, in 1943, streptomycin, I believe is how you say it, changed everything. TB finally became treatable, and by 1961, Waverly Hills closed as a sanatorium. Thousands had entered its halls, and many did not survive. Then, in 1962, Waverly reopened as Woodhaven Geriatric Center. Elderly and dementia patients would be housed there. However, overcrowding, neglect, and abuse would lead to its closure in 1980. So that's sad. I hate hearing that. Like, elderly and dementia and patients and kids. It's like, why?
Work in the industry.
Yeah, why do it if you're just... Makes me mad.
I think some people see it as an easy paycheck, but other people see it as...
It's your family, yeah.
Exactly.
It's crazy. And until you have a family member that's in there and see what they go through and see how bad it is, and don't get me wrong, there's wonderful nurses that they love their job. They do it for the right reasons. But then you see the ones that, like you said, it's a paycheck and I'm not doing that. It's just like, why are you
work
here?
Work at McDonald's.
Yeah, why are you here? Well, by the 1990s, vandals and unhoused people would begin staying in the abandoned building. There is one claim that there was an unhoused man and his dog that was squatting there at Waverly. Two teenage boys that were
being attacked.
Shit out of me. God, it didn't get me that time. Yeah, so there's an unhoused man that was there staying at Waverly after it had closed down, was abandoned, and supposedly two teenage boys who were involved in the occult because it's the 1990s. Any teenage up to no good is part of the occult. They broke into the building, murdered the man, and threw his body down an empty elevator chute.
Is this just a theory, or was there like a body found at
I
the bottom of the
couldn't
chute?
find actual records of it, so it may just be lore.
That's fun. Let's think it happened.
Yeah, it happened. Developers would later propose a church and like a mega church
What
being to
would you
be
do
made
with
out
a
of this.
500-foot chute in a church?
You're going to hell. Well, developers would later propose a church, like one of those mega million-dollar churches. Like this was a $12 million proposal. He also, not only would they have the 500-foot chute to hell, but they also wanted to have a 150-foot statue of Jesus at this church. But due to the lack of donors and investors,
I was going to ask,
it
who's
never
funding
happened.
this?
It didn't happen. In 2001, Tina and Charlie Mattingly bought Waverly. They restored the building and they still host ghost tours there. They'll do like ghost tours at night and then like a historical tour during the day. And they take all the proceeds from that and they're restoring the building with
Cool.
it. They even have like a really cool Christmas light show. Where one of those, you know, when you're driving by and you can kind of see the lights flashing and everything going on with Christmas. That's what they do with Waverly Hills.
And so,
So that's
like,
kind of
oh, it
cool.
is a big facility itself.
Waverly remains on the National Register of Historic Places. It's a testament to both medical history and its haunting legacy. It's haunted by more than just ghosts, but by the haunted memory of its past, the suffering of TB patients, despair of nurses, and tragedies of families torn apart. So now let's get to the hauntings. Ooh. We have Joseph. He is a doctor, and he is often seen in a white coat. The story goes that he contracted TB while he was a doctor there. He's often seen in the halls of like the surgery rooms because it's said that he contracted TB while he worked there, and they were doing the surgery where they remove your ribs, and he died on the table. He's seen walking through the walls, kind of standing off in the corner, just kind of staring and watching. So that's kind of creepy, but that's not the one that freaks me out the most.
Doctors kind of do freak me out.
Yeah, that would be creepy. On the third floor, this is the one that gets me. On the third floor, there's a little girl
It's the children's ward.
that has no eyes, and she will run at you and just keep going till she runs through you.
Well, what does having no eyes have to do with TV?
I have no idea.
That would have been worth looking into.
That's creepy.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Then we have the spirit of Nurse Mary Lee, who allegedly hanged herself. She's often seen in room 502.
Hung herself.
I've heard hung, but everything says hanged. So I don't know. I don't know.
My
I'm
goodness.
just.
Okay. All right.
We should
Hanged
look at it.
herself. She hanged herself.
Let's look at. How do you say? Because I always
That's.
thought the same thing. I'm like, it's hung, it's not hanged. But then everybody says hanged, so I don't know.
Is that a Southern thing?
I don't know. How do you
Past tense.
hung your self?
It's gonna bring up the suicide prevention in general.
I
You need to say, what is past tense of hang?
thinking of a longer, better answer, because you are an idiot. No.
Yeah.
Comment everyday use. Usage is hung yourself. Traditional usage distinguishes them. Hanged is used for formal legal executions. He was hanged for murder, while hung is used for other senses, including the most uses for suicide. Okay, so that's where it is.
Wow, I didn't know there was like a.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Okay.
So I guess you're right. It she did.
Hung herself.
Yeah, she hung herself. But if it was an execution, they hanged her.
Okay.
All right, we're learning. We're learning. Okay, so Mary Lee hung herself. She's often seen in room 502. Visitors report whispers, cold spots, and heavy feeling of despair. She's known to laugh, talk, and tug at clothing. She's also referred to as sad but protective and seems to almost guide visitors while they're there. Then we have a ghost boy named Timmy.
It's always Timmy.
Timmy. That's all I can think of. He died. I know it's
Demon.
crazy. It's of TB. I know you didn't see that coming, but he died of TB. He's often heard. Toys move on their own. Laughter's often heard along with cold spots. There is also, this one's kind of cool. I'd be cool with seeing this one. There's also a phantom hearse often seen at the end of the tunnel where they would load bodies to have them removed.
That would be kind of cool.
That'd be kind of cool. Investigators often bring like toys or balls and see if they move on their own, because that little boy Timmy would often, he supposedly moves them a lot. Shadows and footsteps and whispers are experienced in the death tunnel. Some even feel a cold hand on their shoulder. Nope, I ain't being in the death tunnel.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, they were already dead when they got brought to the tunnel, I'm just saying.
So it makes,
wherever they got killed is probably where they're at, you know. But then again, you're saying they was being disemboweled and...
Yeah, drained.
That's rough.
That's rough.
That's starting to mess with some pretty spunky spirits there.
Well, tall silhouettes are seen darting across hallways, and then they disappear when they're approached. This one creeps me out, too. This one creeps me out, too. And his name is actually, like, they call it the Creeper. It's a black figure that's seen crawling by many witnesses. Said that he is seen not just crawling on floors, but walls and ceilings as well.
Gross. Of course there is. That's nightmare.
No, thank you. Can you imagine being like, what is that crawling on the ceiling? And then that little ghost girl with no eyes comes and runs through you. And then you're freaking out and there's a cold hand on your shoulder.
Heart attack right there.
And then all the little kids are just like, hee hee. Like, okay, it's time to go. It's said that, oh, nope, I just read that. So they also feel a strong sense of dread when they see him. Yeah, because if there's someone crawling on the floor, you're not going to be like, oh, I'm so excited to see you. Many claim it's not a human spirit at all, but something much darker. Dr. Hayes' son also allegedly haunts the fifth floor chapel. He is seen peering from a stained glass window. EVPs are often caught along with the sound of gurney wheels, door slamming, chair scraping across the floor, and children running and laughing in empty halls.
What's your favorite? Let's take a moment. Do you imagine what it'd be like growing up as a dad that was treating tuberculosis and then to ultimately become a tuberculosis doctor yourself?
That's wild.
The amount of death you saw and then probably to ultimately end up dying of TB yourself.
And then, I mean, how do you have a family? Because, I mean, if you're exposing yourself to it,
probably wouldn't.
And then do you make your family, you're moving to the TB hospital, guys?
Yeah.
Sorry.
You get to move into Waverly with us, and you're like, how cool, what is Waverly?
Waverly Place? Yeah. I get to see Selena Gomez?
No, not quite. No. You get to possibly contract TB.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I couldn't imagine.
I'm not surprised his ghost is seen from the church just peering out the window. I'd be pretty distraught, too.
And that was probably, like, his sanctuary, because if you're seeing all this death and despair and hopelessness...
Constantly.
What else are you going to do?
You got to have some sort of faith in something.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, equipment often malfunctions or seems to respond intelligently to questions. I did listen to one podcast called Haunted Road with Amy Bruni. She's from the Ghost Hunters TAPS team. My favorite. Amy recounted of her visit at Waverly Hills that she set up a voice recorder and then she just like was asking normal questions like, what's your name? How can I help you? And she thought her questions were going completely unanswered. Like, she didn't hear anything the whole time. So she packed up. She flew home. She was reviewing the evidence or reviewing all the recordings and stuff. And that is when she heard an EVP that said, where did I go? In a soft female voice.
Oh.
That would be creepy. And speaking of Amy Bruni and the Ghost Hunters visited Waverly a few times. And each time they do find a lot of unexplained evidence, which they're the ones that... I'm sure you've seen it because of Mom, but they're the ones that, like, they try to debunk it. When something happens, they do everything they can to be like...
Like, mimic what the person said in the
environment. Or what they did, or was it knocking pipes? Was there airflow? And sometimes they find stuff, and I'm like, I would have never even thought of that. That's crazy. So, definitely worth a watch. They do catch a ball that seems to move on its own. Steve, my first true love, had his leg grabbed. They caught an EVP of someone saying, get out. I do have a couple of videos that I'm going to show you where actually the current owner, Tina, they're the one, she's the one they're giving the evidence to. I'm not going to show it on the podcast because it's off of network and I don't want to get in trouble for copyright. So I will say if you want to watch it, Ghost Hunters Season 2, Episode 14. That's the original one, and that's when they go to Waverly Hills. Well, then Grant came back because Grant left the show for a little while. And then Grant came back and he kind of built his own team with newer people. And it is Season 2, Episode 9, The Return of Waverly. And that's where all their stuff is.
You said season 2, episode 14, and then season
2, Episode 9. Yeah, for the new Ghost Hunters because there's like two different.
Oh.
So the original one was like Jay, Grant, Steve, Tango. All of them. The new one, I think it's just Grant, and then the rest are newer ones. Like they may have showed up as like guests on the original ones, but on this newer one, I think Grant's the only original one on there. So I'm gonna go ahead and show you them presenting what they found to Tina. Oh, that's the ball.
You've seen this happen? Yes.
So that's the original, or that's the owner now. And their mouth doesn't match the video either. So I was like, that drives me nuts.
He's never had adrenaline like that, except when he's gotten into it.
But there's like nothing around his leg.
That he could have even caught him. Or...
No. They're really good episodes.
Right.
Something fell in that room while they were talking, and there's nobody in there.
There's a noise coming from behind him, some kind of a scraping noise. I'm really not sure what that was. Let's show you that reaction again. I saw it's just.
He was out. He's like, I'm done. But they do find a lot of. They do find a lot of evidence that's interesting to go and look. And again, like I said, they're great about trying to determine what was it, what could have made that sound, what happened, and they can't prove it. I like when they get episodes where they can't prove what it is. And they're stumped. And they're like, I'm stumped, like I have no idea. And you can tell they're like ticked off because they can't figure out an
What caused it?
explanation. Yeah, or an explanation. And that's kind of how I am, like with all ghosts and cryptids and everything. I'm more of a skeptical believer, if that makes sense. Like, I believe there's stuff out there, but I'm not one to be like, that's a ghost. Like,
You believe everything you've got to have.
right. I want proof and I want everything ruled out that it's not something else.
Yeah.
So, are you a skeptical believer?
I don't know. I am too, kind of, I
Yeah.
guess. But at the same time, I was sitting here going on earlier about how I get weird feelings at weird in certain
But
places.
that's your own intuition, and I 100% believe I have a very strong intuition. Like I don't know how many times, but I'll clock them immediately and be like, I don't trust them. There's something about them that I don't trust. I don't know what it is. Everybody else will love them, and then they turn out to be
Right,
a
like you
crappy
said.
person. Yeah. So I do fully believe that some are more open to that, I guess, or their
Just a little
intuition's better.
aware.
Yeah, more aware. I don't know if it comes from my childhood and I had to be like that to protect myself. I think that also has a lot to do with it when you have to, I guess, just like exercising a muscle, you have to use it.
Ghost.
Ghost. That's probably Charlie. But I think. The more you have to use it, and I think that's why people that do go through traumatic experiences are more apt to be that way because they've had to use it. They've had to use that.
They're more keen to sensing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my thoughts on it, anyways. But yeah, that was Waverly Hills. It'd be a cool place to go visit. Go check out
Where was it? Kentucky?
Kentucky, Louisville,
Well,
Kentucky.
you've been to Kentucky through work, haven't you?
Not through work.
Well, okay. Well, then maybe we just have to take a siblings trip out there or something. There ain't much in Kentucky, but I'm sure there's a few hot spots we could
Yeah.
road trip and
Oh,
stuff.
yeah, a bunch of them.
Something, I know this is completely off topic. Kansas City had like the most like hauntings per capita in the United States or something.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. Supposedly, they have a lot of hot spots
We
too.
can do that and then go to a Chiefs game and see Taylor Swift.
Oh my God. I was like, why the Chiefs? That's such a weird. Okay.
Can go do that. So, yeah, that's about it. That's all I got. It was interesting.
It was kind of answered my question earlier with like the whole doctors and kind of what it was like
What
for them.
happens? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like an
I can't
what else did you
imagine
expect?
the, you know, a lot of medical professionals now do experience burnout, especially during COVID, because that's all they're seeing are these people dying and there not being any hope or whatever. and the burnout on it. At least now we know what that is. Back then, they weren't really knowledgeable in mental health. And so I wonder how they navigated that.
I'm sure there wasn't a whole lot of anything. It was probably just drinking and abuse of prescription drugs.
Take a shot of this whiskey real quick before I operate on you.
Go talk to you.
I'd be like, here, I'm taking this. You want some? Because I'm fixing to give you some really bad news.
Yeah, you sure gonna need it.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was it. Very interesting. So I guess go... Oh, we need to mention, I don't know if it's in the camera. Oh, he is in the camera. So we're waiting on Tori to give us her favorite name for our little skeleton here. And then I had Josh, Seth, and Tori pick their favorites. I didn't tell them who posted it. I just gave them the list of names. Once they tell me theirs, I'm going to put a poll up on Facebook and everybody can vote on their favorite. And then whoever... we end up naming the skeleton, I'm going to send him a goodie bag.
Sweet.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to have some merch. I looked at making shirts and hoodies and sweatshirts. So if y'all want shirts and hoodies and sweatshirts, let us know. I'll probably have to do a pre-order. That way I don't spend a bunch of money and have a bunch of shirts that
I mean,
what do we do with?
You just wear them around. It's free publicity.
There we go. Yeah. And also go like, comment, subscribe. Rate our show. It helps so much. You guys have been doing amazing. The more you guys comment and share and rate, it just pushes it out there, and we could not do it without you. It just helps our algorithm and helps us get out to other people, which is just what we want.
Mm-hmm.
To share it with everybody.
And we want to get big.
Big.
Everybody to hear us.
Shout out from the rooftops.
Could you imagine if we had like a radio station? Am I thinking too big now?
What's that? Casey Kasem. That's what I thought about when he said that. Like the voice on, he did a lot for Scooby-Doo. Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
He did. All right. Well, that's it for now. I've got to get off here so I can go pick up Josh.
Shh.
Covert. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell my kids. I don't know yet. No. I'm going to have to turn my Life 360 off because as soon as I leave, it ding them. No, that's why. No. That's why.
She's just telling because she's a milkman.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go see my boyfriend. Don't worry about mm-hmm. it. But that's why I parked at the other end of the driveway that way.
I was wondering why somebody made their car like a speedy getaway. I was like, all right, yeah. Somebody's gonna get up out of here.
That way I can back out and not get caught. But I got some nosy ass kids, so.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
An awesome episode.
I like it doing the history stuff.
It was pretty interesting to learn about it.
You have to listen to the CPR case if you haven't listened, and the Paris morgue. That's like dark history.
The Paris morgue, is that the one where like everybody was going to see like the bodies and the... Okay, yeah, I started listening to that one right before lunch.
That one's wild. That one's wild. So go make your coworkers listen. Go share, comment.
Make your significant other listen to it and tell them to listen to it at work. Make them
exactly
share.
Exactly. All right. Well, we'll see y'all next week.
Stay spooky, friends.
Stay pooky.
Stay pooky.